So Nicholas Beisert and Matthias Shattuck are going to give introductory talks on this subject over the next couple of days. And so I thought I would just spend maybe 15 minutes talking, just giving a perspective on the physics if people are interested, since you've all arrived here, and confuse you before they start. So this is basically about the possibility that the n equals four gauge theory in particular is solvable at least at large n. So this has an ADS-CFT dual. We have we solved the weakly coupled gauge theory and the strongly coupled string theory, but there's a serious possibility that this system is solvable for all values of the touch parameter. Solvable means at the least that you'd be able to calculate or give some kind of equation for all of the anomalous dimensions at least, and ultimately also things like the correlation functions which determine string scattering amplitudes. Now, what a solution here means seems to still, and maybe this will change over time, but it still seems to mean the beta ansatz, where either on the string or on the corresponding planar diagram space, you can think about the spectrum as really just a collection of particles, and the particles have only two goes to two scattering. So this is, let's say, P is the world sheet momentum here with respect to some spatial coordinate. It's only two goes to two. And in particular, any kind of n goes to n scattering is just repeated two goes to two scatterings. So if supposing first that these particles had no quantum numbers, there was only one species, you could then write down the n-body wave equation, the n-body wave function. The n-body wave functions would just be the plane waves times or an order-dependent phase. So all you have here is a phase for scattering, so an order-dependent phase, and that's the beta ansatz. Now, the particles that are scattering here transform under the symmetries, the space-time symmetries of ADS5 plus S5, so they've got indices. And so the index that comes in over here can go out. It can either go out to the right or left or annihilate with the other incoming index. And so there is kind of a second order beta ansatz to keep track of the motion of the indices on the set of particles. But this is the nested beta ansatz, and it is well established. So this is kind of what the form of a solution might look like. And so what's the evidence this is possible here? Well, on the gauge theory side, it's true at one loop, and it's true at two loops, and it's partly true at three and four. Nicholas will, I guess, tell you more precisely, but it's true to some interesting number of loops. On the string theory side, actually, I think is the strongest evidence. That you can write down a beta ansatz solution, that there is some beta ansatz description of the system in which the n-body wave function is of this form. And
you have to go from an n-body wave function to eigenvalues of the dilatation operator.
Okay, so the dilatation operator is the Hamiltonian here.
Yes.
And in particular, another piece of the beta, since the Hamiltonian is just the sum of the single particle energies.
Sorry, this is a really stupid question. What particles? I mean, are we doing a CFT?
Okay, so, well, it's.
You mean that H status is made out of some matrices satisfying M Baxter equations or something
well,
like that? And that's the true to three loops in the perturbation theory?
The dimensions. Well, if you got on the gauge theory side, where your Hamiltonian is the Hamiltonian rate of quantization, the dimensions are given as a sum of single particle energies, where the single particle energies are determined by, once you have this wave function, the fact that it's periodic quantizes the momenta and therefore the energies. Please correct me if I say anything wrong.
The only thing is that that's not necessarily wrong, but there might be two solutions because there might be two systems.
You're saying that there might be ADS and CFT.
You are describing it in the language that is appropriate for the plane wavelength.
No, not at all. No, this is true. This kind of structure appears.
This is meant to be for general n equal 4 gauge series.
Yeah, generally.
What's P? What's P?
So I'm used to thinking about this from the string theory side, where P is simply the momentum conjugate to sigma. There is some corresponding object on the gauge theory side, which does it have a natural interpretation?
It's a composite operator, so you can put labels on the positions of whatever is inside the operator, and the dual to this position is the momentum.
The composite operator is traced by the atom from origin.
Right, so you say in this BMN language, for example, then you have impurities which are more like excitations, actually, then they have positions and they have to trace.
But Hiroshi was just specifically asking that you're not in this plane wave limit.
No, but the picture is the same. We have some composite operator, so in order to describe how it's composed, you have a notion of coordinates in that space, and the dual to these coordinates are the momentum.
I think what he's saying, the gauge theory point of view is like a lattice, right? You have finite points. The string theory is like
yeah, but when you put it on a circle, mm-hmm. string theory is on a cylinder, then that's also lattice from that.
Well, it's slightly different, right? This P goes from all the way to infinity. The gauge theory.
Yeah, also Jerry Rooks. That's one of the big mysteries.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, no, this is good. This is good.
This is true. You were at the point. For your four loops of the gauge theory.
So right. So up here is the gauge theory. The wave functions. The operators of definite nominal dimension. You're in this way in the string theory. So what's the evidence? So I think the strongest evidence that some structure like this.
So is it true? This is true for general n equal 4 gauge theory for one and two loops. That's a fact.
For one loop, it's certainly true. For two loops and three loops, it's very probable in some sectors. Which is to say it's true.
That was a conservative statement, yeah.
I mean, there are specific calculations that I think you did using this assumptions that gave the right answer. So you computed the dimensions of some operators.
For any operator?
For one operator, you computed. And you got the right answer because you did that.
So he's being careful.
Thank you.
So doing it for one operator, you improve it, right?
Well, yeah, that's right.
But for an operator, yeah. Doesn't constitute proof.
So the operator, you consider it one that creates this huge string? Is that the idea? You create a big string and that momentum around it?
Yeah, the operator is the one that creates the string. The structure is present even for particles of small numbers of quanta, right? I mean, it's the comparison with string theory is made for large operators.
Something more interesting is this particles, do they carry the index of global symmetry?
Yes, I said
so
that.
So they are in representations of PSU.
Yes.
And the representation depends on P.
P is the momentum, not this as well.
No. If it doesn't depend on P, then this implies that anomalous dimension, which is the center of the PSU group.
It's not the center.
P is the momentum on the worksheet, or the parameterization of the
That's why it's more interesting, because this would imply that kind of if the energy is sum of individual energies, and each individual energy is in fact
Nicholas will answer all your questions tomorrow, but go ahead and ask now so he knows. No, go ahead and ask now so he knows what you're going to ask him tomorrow. Okay. What I wanted to say was, I think the best evidence that this is true comes from the string theory side of duality, where one knows that there's a one parameter, it's a complex parameter, family of conserved charges, which look like Wilson lines. And again, z is a parameter. And these are the vector potential here is built out of the local Rolle currents. And it has zero field strength, which it's non-trivial, it's physically non-trivial, it's both from these physical currents, but it has zero field strength, and that implies that the Wilson line is independent of position. It can be deformed freely, and it's conserved. And so these conserved currents, kind of charges, which are this funny non-local form, because this is a matrix in the, again, the symmetry space of ADS5 cross S5. And so this is like a Wilson line. It's multi-local, and that doesn't just, it's multi-local. Now,
is this a statement about the actual Warshit stereo string or some analogous model?
This is a statement, okay. This is, first of all, a classical statement about the ADS5 cross S5 Warshit theory, the exact one. And Berkowitz, in his pure spinner formulation of that theory, has shown that these survive quantization. Now, apparently earlier in this program, the cross-off. It's a cohomology argument, so it's supposed to be exact. Not understanding the pure spinner theory, I can't answer that question, but cohomology arguments usually mean that there are more ways to fix the operator than there are possible things that might break the symmetry. I don't know if that's the exact form of the argument. But Nekrasov, apparently early in the program, was saying there might be an anomaly in the pure spinner. I don't know if anybody knows anything about this. Which, if it's true, it would invalidate that. But to the extent that Berkowitz's formalism, including this last argument he made, makes sense, then one knows that the Rolle theory does have some kind of higher symmetry structure in it, and the claim is as an exact statement.
Is he giving any hint how I can use this?
No. I think he's just constructing them. You should. Maybe we should have some limitations about pure spinners. I certainly don't.
So is this supposed to be for long history?
Okay, good. So these operators, if you have a finite string, then it's conserved only if you close it and take the trace. And however, it can wind any number of times before you trace. So you can effectively observe any representation or equivalently the independent eigenvalues of this operator. The eigenvalues of gauge invariant are conserved. Again, you'll hear more about this in the next couple of days. On an infinite string, which I think is always good to think about, just an infinite one-dimensional system, then in fact the open exponentials without tracing are conserved, as long as things don't run up to infinity. So how are these used? If we were interested not in the finite system but the infinite system, and if we were interested in a one-dimensional theory that instead of being conformal like the Rolle theory of the string had a mass gap, like various sigma models of dynamical masses, then the existence of this kind of current is enough to show that the S matrix for that system factorizes in precisely this way. And it strongly constrains it. It doesn't determine it. It strongly constrains it, and so.
What's the S matrix in some kind of world sheet?
S matrix in the world sheet. It's in the world sheet. This is every world sheet, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was it. You were talking about Yang-Hill.
This is the world, but again, in the planar space of the Feynman diagram.
Can you repeat the statement? You started out by talking about the classical theory, you know?
Classical theory. Then I said these are claimed to survive in the quantum theory. You can show by two routes. One route is to use the fact that these things usually have poles, and at the poles you can pick out the local currents. And one knows that having local higher spin currents is enough to show that the S matrix is factorizable. But it's also been shown directly from the non-local currents.
Local high spin currents?
Like in, pardon?
what kind of loophole?
Well, again, the discussion here is for, I'm now sort of segueing to cases where again, there's a mass gap and a real S matrix and things like the ON sigma models and so on.
So it has this local.
You know this, of course.
I didn't understand.
But in fact,
there were scalars.
Pardon?
I thought they were scalars.
The charges?
Yes.
I don't think so. Certainly the ON sigma models have both these and spin 3 and spin 4 currents. And the existence of even one spin 3 or higher current is enough to show that the S matrix factorizes.
Okay. Yes.
Yep.
So if you work at a light cone gauge, like part of the sigma model may not be conformal, does that count?
Well, I don't know. The problem with light cone gauge in this subject is that you lose world sheet, you lose some of the structure. You lose world sheet Lorentz invariants, which from some points of view is useful, but not from others. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a small literature recently on the forms of these charges in light cone theories. I don't know. There's been relatively little done in the subject in the light cone, I think is a fair statement to make.
If you had like a matter part of the theory that had a RG flow, you would then learn the string theories of
I see what you're saying. So good. The argument that these charges imply a factorized lesson, the standard argument assumes Lorentz invariants it was directed at one dimensional field theory, so it assumed Lorentz invariants. It might be sufficiently Galilean invariants, I'm not sure. In more than two dimensions, this would become the Coleman-Medulla theorem, which tells you that the S matrix is one. But in two dimensions, it simply tells you that it's factorizable and gives you a lot of information about it, but doesn't determine. There's these finite ambiguity, the CDD poles, so the finite ambiguity in the S matrix.
This picture is particles.
Pardon?
So it survives the continuous limit, sort of.
Continuous limit of the world sheet.
Yeah, I would be more comfortable with this thing on the lattice. This is particles, and it's a continuum limit because there is no conformal theory in either.
Right. So having these charges, if we were talking about a field theory that had a mass gap, would be a lot of information.
Yeah.
But now the world sheet theory is conformal and doesn't have a normal S matrix. It doesn't have a normal sort of particles don't separate. Nevertheless, Zamolodchikov has shown in various examples that the S matrix still plays the same role in sort of allowing you to construct a beta ansatz. That is, even though it doesn't have its usual interpretation, this construction still makes sense, at least again in the large volume limit. So to get to the string theory, first of all, there's the problem that it's conformal, and secondly, there's the problem that it's finite volume, and knowing everything about the infinite volume doesn't tell you everything about the finite volume. And this is a hard problem in this whole subject on both sides. That is, going from understanding this to understanding this. It's a classic hard problem.
So if you looked at the ADS times sphere sigma model and the sphere part itself, by itself have a mass gap.
If you threw away the fermions, the sphere part by itself would run to strong coupling.
Right. Right. And the Ramon flexos are balancing that as well.
Right. Right.
That doesn't change what you said.
But it's a totally different system, isn't it?
Yeah. So
do you need to know anything about commutation of these Qs?
So.
If
there's a close connection between the structure coefficients of the Qs and the S matrix. So if you knew one, you'd know the other.
Yes.
But just knowing about, I believe the statement is just knowing about their existence without knowing their commutators, you know that the S matrix factorizes.
By point of fact, shouldn't they satisfy some kind of rating relations?
In the infinite volume system where they're untraced, they satisfy one of these Yangian algebras about which I know relatively little. I don't know if anybody here does. And again, but on the finite volume system where they're traced, it's abelian. They all commute. So it's a pretty simple algebra. Yeah.
And what does it mean that the theory is conformal? Does it mean that implies something about the dispersion relation?
Right. So in infinite volume, the dispersion relation on the world sheet is V equals 1. Just to give one of the nicest things in this whole subject works directly from these charges, where Kazakov, Marshakov, Minahan, and Zarembo, extended by various people, and you'll hear more about this again from Nicholas, were able to just basically use the existence of these charges and very little else. One knows a fair amount about their analytic structure. They're analytic in most places. They have a few poles which are related to the local charge in the system. They were able to essentially find the general classical solution. That is, they were able to write down a spectral curve from which you could extract the anomalous dimension. So again, this is the classical limit. The classical limit means that you've taken, think about this as a classical field theory. So it's first of all, you've taken the classical limit, the charge goes to infinity, so many quanta. And also the dimensionless world sheet coupling, which is 1 over the square root of the parameter, goes to 0. So they've been able to solve the system pretty completely in this limit. Again, they did it for a subsector, and Nicholas and others extended it to the full spectrum. And so the problem is to undo these two limits. And it's becoming clear that these are two separate limits. So in the limit of infinite charge, the beta ansatz, which starts out as discrete equations for the quantization of these momenta, becomes some kind of continuous equation for the density of particles in momentum space. And for those of you who looked, for example, at large end limits of matrix models, it's the same kind of thing where in the large charge limit, you get a continuous integral equation. Anyway, so to undo the infinite charge limit, this continuous beta ansatz has to go back to a discrete one. And to go back to the quantum world sheet again, they use classical properties of these. And so this is kind of where the subject is. There's a large amount of guesswork. Everybody who works on it in one way or another is doing a lot of calculating and guessing and checking, I should mention one thing. So I talked about the gauge side and the string side and some evidence of integrability on both sides. And indeed, it's the same beta ansatz, the same integral equations in special limits. But also there are so-called discrepancies. And what those discrepancies mean is that things, the interpolation between weak and strong coupling is not as simple as was assumed. There are functions of this dimensionless coupling, which are similar to the famous three quarters in the black free brain entropy, where you have functions which are numbers like 1 at strong coupling and three quarters or 0 at weak coupling. And it's clear that there are a few low orders where these don't appear for some reasons that might be connected with supersymmetry and integrability and the combination between them. But as you go to higher orders, these functions appear. And so there's no clear understanding now of the general form of the beta ansatz for this system. Anyway, like there's a lot of guesswork. I always like to compare this with rational conformal field theory, a subject that Greg, for one, knows and loves. The reason is because if the world sheet theory had Nouveau-Schwartz, if the string theory had Nouveau-Schwartz instead of Ramon's backgrounds, This subject would have been much easier because there would be a current algebra, there would be a familiar sort of infinite dimensional world sheet algebra, which would essentially determine, after satisfying a few constraints, the spectrum, the correlation functions.
So what about ADS3?
So in fact, there are examples, ADS3, where you do have Navojvod's backgrounds, and again, various people here have helped to develop that. In those cases, in that exact case, the CFT side is much more mysterious. In fact, I think it's correct to say that there is no limit there in which the CFT side becomes free. So you don't have, it's interesting, but you don't have.
There's an orbital point in the logical aspect.
But it doesn't correspond to the NS background.
Well, it corresponds to turning on a Riemann field.
I think what Joe stated is that if you restrict in the space of NS backgrounds, there isn't a weakly coupled limit in the picture.
Yeah. I think that's right.
I don't think that's right. Okay. I thought that Larson and Martin had mapped out the moduli space. And there's a line, there's a sort of a horizontal axis that's somewhere along the line. And there's a line along which you have the symmetric product theory. But it's, and I agree, far from the space-time background you want to study with zero.
Okay. So it's true that the CFT side is, in that side, is much more serious. So anyway, if that was a situation here, we'd have a crank we could turn, and it would be very much easier. But instead, it's very painful. Every step is again guesswork, and the general structure isn't clear. So there's clearly a need. I mean, integrability is old. The subject is 30 years old, and nobody has found this crank. But given the evidence that there is some kind of higher structure here, and that ultimately one will be able to use it to solve the system and maybe others.
We're at 74 years old.
74? Okay, yeah.
I have the vague impression.
Almost as old as beta. Yeah.
I have the vague impression that the theory of quantum groups and all of that was supposed to.
Well, did anybody know it? I mean, it hasn't. I don't, that appears. Does
it's supposed to be the mathematics that was supposed to solve the solvable thing.
It doesn't get cited very much in the literature, so if anybody knows what it is, maybe they can make a quick killing.
So what you just said, the Leningrad School started out with the Young-Baxter equation and developed this whole mathematical theory of quantum groups and Q deformed current algebras, which formalized by Drinkfeld and Jimbo, and it's an enormous mathematical subject, which I thought was supposed to be not the representation very intuitive on the group, it's supposed to be useful for this. You're supposed to play the analogous role. I'm thinking about your analogous I thought it was supposed to be, the analogous mathematics to the WZW, to current algebra, for massive integral along. Maybe I'm just wrong.
But integrals is a much bigger subject because there's plenty of things which have never been which have never been explained within this framework, so it's not like
including leaves. That's why, I think it's quite relevant to ask us the algebra.
Let's see, normally when you quantum deform an algebra, you change the group, right? It's not the original group is not the symmetry of the new theory.
So if you Q deform SL2, SL2 V algebra, it's really
That's right, but so in this context, you want to still have the global symmetry, right?
No, but I mean, these Qs might form some algebra which has some nice representation theory. Supposing the Qs form some kind of quantum group type algebra, know about the representation.
No, but it's not quantum groups.
Sorry?
It's not quantum groups. It's kind of rational deformations.
I'm using quantum groups in a very loose sense. I mean, some kind of quantum deformations of a current algebra or something.
No, but it's quantum, it's important that somehow, integrability doesn't require symmetry. That is
I thought that's what the Young-Baxter equation was all about.
No, but I mean, you can completely destroy. You can even destroy these quantum symmetries, and then I mean, then if you come to things like X, Y, Z, and then it's not clear how to put those into the quantum group.
I'm really confused. I thought that if you have an integral S matrix, you have the Young-Baxter equation for the 2-to-2 scattering, right? I thought that there's a paper of Dr. John Reshetikin at the Yale, where they take the solution of the Young-Baxter equation and they introduce these operators I call L, and they have a braiding matrix, like L1, L2 equals this Young-Baxter matrix, L2, L1. And then the matrix elements of the L's generate an non-commutative algebra, which is some one of these, what I'm loosely speaking of as a quantum group. If you want to represent that algebra, and then those, So there is a symmetry. I mean, that was the Leningrad school interpretation. They were trying to find what the symmetry was that was lying behind these integral systems.
And so much is the same if you're looking at XYZ case and you're dealing with elliptic. You're dealing with elliptic version of the story that you mentioned.
Yes.
The one with the car matrix itself.
Yes, good.
And I'm not sure that has been worked out completely.
Yes.
And not even completely. That has been worked out.
The algebraic structure in that case is not known.
It's something even more complicated.
But maybe there are some examples. I'm not sure. As usually, the trigonometric is the total of the story.
Oh, okay.
But it's also clear that somehow these Q deformations have not been important for any of this course so far. It's kind of clear that. In terms of these R matrices, the R matrices are some sort of deformed things, but they are rational, not trigonometric. Quantum groups lead to trigonometric R matrices.
I thought the other case was the Squillian
analysis.
What?
I thought people knew about the other case. Most general cases, yeah, but it's not clear how to interpret it
There are examples, but for R matrices, if you look at the list of solutions, trigonometric you get fairly completely used. For elliptic, you get some examples, but not much.
Craig says rational, R matrices, trigonometric, and elliptic.
Yeah.
And then there's even yet other things on higher dimensions.
Is there anyone who'd like to give a talk on quantum groups at some point? I know nothing about it.
So, so do you think that if we deform it so that Young can become some quantum group, quantum affine algebra,
yeah,
then
it becomes the distinction.
To me, Young has an example of quantum group. So you don't think that complication is in that Young has more complicated representation theory than say quantum affine algebra or fine. Not an expert either. What I've heard from the experts that the representational theory of this Youngian is so underdeveloped that it cannot be applied to this particular case.
Well, it means it's underdeveloped.
I think that
you do have this underlying symmetry in some
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so in a sense, that's what they are doing.
This is a neat case. So for
it's mathematical. It's mathematical.
Tied to A is 5 times S5 versus something that extends if you. Well, the space time symmetry is 4. I mean,
So these charges exist. They exist for a wide class of sigma models. Their construction usually uses the global symmetries of the sigma model. And one question is, as you deform to less symmetric things that are more QCD-like, does any of that survive? And so far, at least, I don't think there are any really optimistic results there. But
I mean, this is an infinite set of currents, right? Finite global symmetry doesn't seem to be so crucial.
No, but it comes up in their construction. It comes up in the construction of what these are. Yeah, but most cases where these are known really are fairly symmetric. But I guess, I mean, obviously, there must be.
You make use of the fact that
AES2 process 2 probably would. Yeah.
You make use of the fact that target space is a symmetric space.
Yeah, I mean, this construction. Now, there are integral systems that have no global symmetries, but they're the currents. I mean, I don't know how one. What the lever is that enables you to construct them.
Well, but if you start with these and you add relevant information from
right, so
does it deform those things in some way?
Well, okay, so some relevant perturbations preserve integrability. In fact, one of the ways to get at the conformal system in many cases is to consider the integral perturbation, take that S matrix and go back. I think for the ADS5 theory, a lot of the structure becomes more well defined if the world sheet is a lattice. But if the ADS5 theory had a perturbation, could be lattice size, preserving integrability, you'd probably have more levers. Or if you could break the conformal invariance, preserving integrability again, you'd probably have more levers to apply. And I don't know whether either of those are known to be possible.
Let's see, the question of whether you can deform, make it massive.
Yes.
How would you analyze it? You would just.
Well,
you for. Write down invariant operators. And
that would be the straightforward thing. There's a funny deformation that Neely and I have applied in an analog model where you add epsilon degrees of freedom. So it's not an obvious deformation. You add epsilon degrees of freedom to the system and take epsilon goes to zero. So that's, again, there might be other more direct things.
That one works not
necessarily for this system, but for systems that have some of the same symmetries. Right. I mean,
you may work in some other example.
Right.
We're trying
to do the SPNN group, which is I guess SUNN group, okay. which I guess is close to what you have for the ADS3 Ramon theory. So yeah, there's some hope that's one way to get. Yeah, to get and what we're doing gives you insight into the one of the Lennard corrections, but not the finite J corrections. Those are a totally different.
Why? Because there are more fields on the quantum level.
Which are the?
Why is it different?
Oh, because finite J is hard. Finite J is, which means finite volume, is again this issue that knowing everything about the infinite volume system doesn't tell you everything about the finite volume system.
Is it easy to implement a physical state condition?
It seems to come up. It seems to in fact be implemented naturally. When you talk, Nicholas, when you talk about the sigma model, the spectral curve, is it easy to explain how the physical state conditions get implemented? I mean, they seem to get implemented very, very easily, right?
There's a symmetry or whatever.
They live a separate life, but you impose them on the spectral curve.
In the picture on the right side or left side? Which side are you talking about? Right side. Right side.
There seems to be sort of a natural gauge fixing, at least for what's.
They seem to be quite important. They make
the problem easier.
Yeah, much easier.
Right. So the physical states are simpler to study than the general non-sigma model excitations.
Is it?
Yes.
If you heat the system up, does that regulate this in some way?
If you heat it, the classic thing to do is to calculate the central charge using, Cardy's trick.
Well, I mean, it's another way of introducing that confinement.
Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, good. That's.
But it's in the same theory.
I have this conjecture that one way to solve a finite volume system is to heat the system up until the correlation matrix is very short, put that finite volume, then cool it down. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether you can actually implement that, but in terms of an actual algorithm. That might do it because it does what you say.
Right.
It makes a very short correlation length, which is insensitive to the volume. The question is whether you really can.
I thought what people did was to look at the theory.
In the other direction.
Explain that, yeah.
Okay, right. So the thermodynamic data. Suppose you know everything about this in the very very long lines, and you want to know about a circle. Then you consider a world sheet that looks like this. And but there's a very strict limit. You can calculate. So this is a thermal. This is now a thermal state in the theory that you understand. And so it's knowing its free energy tells you the central charge on a circle, which is one fact. And by putting twists in, you can calculate the energies of a finite number of states, which are kind of the lowest states in various sectors. But this is not the correct, you aren't able to use this. And I think this is something that Zonal Triple Hub has pushed on. But I think it's correct to say that it's still sort of a limited set of states that this really gives you information about.
But
I mean, maybe this is something more effective.
I asked him what he thought about this method.
Yes?
He said, well, there was never really a strong need for computing more, but perhaps you could do more. And this is just a sociological
statement. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's maybe he just needs to be told that we really want to know the answer. But he's pushed fairly hard on this. And it's, I mean, the wanting to know, in fact, the finite volume spectrum is clearly a, because if your interest is statistical mechanics, again, you want the anomalous dimensions, which is the energies of finite volume. And so, for example, for the analog model that Neely and I have studied, the condensed matter people know the anomalous dimensions exactly for one value of the coupling, but they don't have any way to move on of that. So there's interest in these from. So we have two talks this week. I've heard a lot of people say there are not enough talks in this program. maybe I heard wrong. Right? Anyway, it's also been suggested that Neil, you give a talk next week about sort of our perspective on the lambda corrections on the sigma model. What else? What else do we want to hear about? We also have a few more people arriving next week who've worked on this, Radu and Sirban. So what other directions? Quantum groups? Should we just
Smell quantum?